Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Reporting from Washington, D.C., this is Cultural Baggage. I have with me here today one of the attorneys for Angel Raich and her husband, Mr. Robert Raich. Speaking of your wife, Angel versus Ashcroft, he's now gone. She's still standing, and the Supreme Court has not made their decision as yet. Sir, your thoughts in that regard?
Well, you're right. I mean, as we're speaking today on May 4th, the Supreme Court has not yet ruled. It's been some time since we had our oral argument in the case on November 29th. The court's ruling could come at any time. All we can say definitively is that the ruling will come by the end of June. But the court is going to be issuing a ruling at some point before then, and we certainly are optimistic. We hope it will be a good ruling. However, the court will do whatever it wishes. The most important thing to remember is, regardless of how the court rules, one way or the other, it will not affect the safety and the laws of patients in all of those states that do have medical cannabis laws. This case is completely about federal law and federal law only, and all of those patients who are protected by the state and local laws where they're from will still continue to be protected by those laws, regardless of whether we win or lose in this case.
I was in D.C. to learn and observe the Marijuana Policy Project's training of activists from around the nation. Immediately following that training, a press conference was held on the steps of our nation's capital.
My name is Rob Campia. I'm an executive director of the Marijuana Policy Project based here in Washington, D.C. We're a full-time lobbying organization that's working to end the federal government's war on medical marijuana patients. I would like to introduce Congressman Barney Frank, who is the leader on this issue on Capitol Hill. Congressman Frank introduced the first medical marijuana bill that had been in Congress in a decade. He revived the issue on Capitol Hill 10 years ago. He's been the lead sponsor of the medical marijuana bill every Congress since, and he will do so once again today. So with that, I want to introduce Congressman Frank.
Thank you. I am once again introducing, with several of my colleagues, legislation that seems to me a matter of just plain common sense, namely that the policy that we have long followed in this country of letting each state decide for itself how medicine should be practiced ought to continue. And we shouldn't make an exception to the general rule that served us well, that states decide how medical practice should be carried out because of a kind of ideological objection to marijuana.
Ideological objections to marijuana. That seems to be prevalent only within the Congress. So I decided while in Washington, D.C., that a la Michael Moore, I would ask the man in the street and a few congressmen passing by what they think of prohibition.
Angelina from Maryland, and I believe marijuana should be legal because not only for medical reasons, but, I mean, it's natural, and people smoke it, people smoke cigarettes, and people get a high off cigarettes, too. So, that's my belief.
While I was conducting this poll next to several machine-gun-armed, blue-suited federal officers, I did encounter two people who wanted to continue this drug war. I encountered one congressman who refused to go on the air, and this gentleman.
My name is Marvin, and I live in Montana. I think that drugs are destroying our society, the inner cities, the rural areas, the urban population. Doesn't matter where you are, I think they're a blight.
Okay, but is our policy going to correct that, or is there a better way to go about this?
Well, I'd hang all the sons of bitches that sell them drugs, but I don't think you could do that legally.
On Wednesday, May 4th, the date of this press conference, the Washington Post said, "The focus of the drug war in the United States has shifted significantly over the past decade from hard drugs to marijuana, which now accounts for nearly half of all drug arrests nationwide, according to an analysis of federal crime statistics released yesterday. The study of FBI data by a Washington-based think tank, the Sentencing Project, found that the proportion of heroin and cocaine cases plummeted from 55% of all drug arrests in 1992 to less than 30% 10 years later. During the same period, marijuana arrests rose from 28% of the total to 45%. End quote.
Next, we have Congressman Maurice Hinchey.
Well, thank you. Thanks very much. And it's a pleasure to be here with all of you and my colleagues in the House on both sides of the aisle who are working with us on this very important issue. It's an issue of individual choice and health care as well as states' rights. There are now 10 states in the United States that have adopted laws that decriminalize the use of marijuana for medical purposes. Alaska, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Maryland, Nevada, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington. These laws were passed in order to allow people in those states, the constituents of the legislative bodies and the governors of those states, to relieve the pain and the discomfort and the other side effects that they experience as a result of a variety of illnesses: AIDS, cancer, multiple sclerosis, glaucoma, just to name a few. Why is it that the federal government is insisting upon changing this in a way that is going to prevent those states from giving the kind of help that they want to and need to their constituents?
Back to the streets for another opinion.
Do you see any success on the horizon? Are they going to win this drug war?
Well, basically, I'm an optimist by nature, but I'm a realist. As far as winning a drug war, it'll be as far as, and as a black American, powerful whites really control the city, although most blacks live in the city. It's only going to be halted at any point when it comes to, when it starts to affect them or hurt them. As long as it doesn't, they can be successful making money, doing it, and a lot of that is controlled. Drug dealers pretty much, they have a lot of ties in the cap, in my opinion, in terms of running the city, in terms of, you know, until someone is really hurt personally, when they feel it's a threat to them, then they'll have it. There were no bars around the security that you have around the Capitol. 10 years ago, it wasn't this way because of 9-1-1. When terror really strikes those who are most powerful and most important, then they'll invest more money in it. But I think drugs are here to stay. It's unfortunate. It's not going anywhere. As far as losing a drug war, society is going to go on. There's always going to be rich people. There'll always be poor people. There'll always be drugs.
Next, from the press conference, Congressman Dana Rohrabacher.
We need to have a good dose of common sense when it comes to these type of laws. It makes no sense at all to have the federal government overriding a vote of the people of a state on what should be criminalized and what shouldn't be criminalized in terms of personal consumption. Our founding fathers set up a federal system for a purpose. It was to protect the rights of the individual, and it was to have a system that would be more responsive to the people and be actually a more efficient way of administering law. It was very clear our founding fathers wanted criminal law to be handled at the state and local level. The federal government should not be interfering in this, especially when it deals with a direct vote of the people as to something that they want to have legal or illegal in terms of personal consumption. In this case, what we've got is the medical use of marijuana. I see no reason to believe that the people of the various states cannot make up their mind as to whether doctors should be permitted to offer prescriptions of marijuana for their patients if they believe that this is better for their patients. The federal government should butt out.
Yeah.
Truth be told, the featured speaker at the press conference, as well as at that night's MPP gala, which I want to say was a major success, was our next speaker.
Thank you. I think all of you know who I am. I'm Montel Williams, and I've heard the senators and congressmen speak, and they're talking about states' rights. They're talking about the difference between states' rights and federal rights. But I got to tell you something. What the abomination is to me is that we're standing here on the Capitol steps. I have a can of U.S.-grown marijuana grown at the University of Mississippi that's distributed every single month for the last 25 years, originally to 12 patients across the country, now 7 because 5 of them have passed away. The U.S. government, every single month for the last 25 years for our program through the University of Mississippi, has been providing marijuana medicinally to patients in this country. 12 people, 7 people now because 5 have died. I don't know if you guys watch me walk up here. Let me tell you something, I hurt right now. I'm hurting. Why? Because I knew I had to come to Washington, D.C., and I can't carry anything. So I know I'm going to get busted. But let me ask this question, sir, Congressman, one of you answer this. How can a government distribute marijuana to 7 patients in the country and claim that he is in more pain than me? Or claim that his illness is worse than mine? So therefore, we as a government, we as a government can grow it, can study it, can test it, can understand its efficacy, have proven that it works, because you know the federal government's not going to give something to people that they're afraid to get sued over. So they know it works. They know it's been working for the last 25 years. But instead, what they're saying to me and to Rachel and Angel and everybody else out here is that, you know what? We've decided that these 7 people are the people that we want to have suffer less. Montel, we don't give a damn about you. You suffer right along with the way you've been suffering. They've all talked about the drugs that are available. Oxycontin, morphine, Tylenol, Percocet, Ultracet, Vicodin. Go down the list. I've taken them legally. Not one of them does anything to me other than shut down my intestines, cause me to go to the bathroom 17 times a day. It still hurts. I can drool in a corner and not be a tax-paying member of this society. Because if I go on morphine, that's exactly what I will do. I'll lay in the corner and drool and urinate on myself. So instead, I choose to do what our federal government has done for 7 people. I choose to do that for myself. This is really so simple, it's ignorant. We could change this from a Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 drug, problem solved. But instead, we got to come up with 95 different bills and different ways to trick people into understanding that we claim to be a compassionate nation. We're shoving democracy down everybody's throats around the world at prices that none of us can afford. And all we're asking for is for us to be compassionate and understand what democracy was based on. Ladies and gentlemen, I spent 22 years in the military. I fought the war on drugs. You can ask the last 3 administrations. I was in 1,500 high schools across America demanding that children stay away from drugs. I haven't changed my mind, but I'll tell you this today. If my daughter or my child comes to me in as much pain as I'm in, I'm firing up a joint from the smoke.
Yes. Yes.
Because you know what? And if I find out the next day that that didn't help them, I'll take them to find a doctor that will. The reason why there's 195 different pain medications is because the pharmaceutical companies understand it don't work for everybody. Medicinal marijuana will not work for everybody. It will not. But listen to me. If I have a doctor who is smart enough to tell me to stick a needle in my body with morphine, I got a doctor who's smart enough to tell me to take 12 Oxycontins in 6 hours, that same doctor is smart enough to be able to say, Montel, I think medicinal marijuana works. You should be able to use it. And right now, what we need to do is back these 2 bills and make sure the federal government stops going after people like Angel and all the people who are just trying to work and pay our taxes. That's all we're asking to do, folks. And I don't know. I'll go back to the beginning thing that I said. How ignorant is it that we, a nation, can distribute a product to some people and arrest other people for trying to get it themselves?
I want to make note of the fact here that all those bumps and squeals and sirens you hear are very indicative of the fact that Washington, D.C., especially around the Capitol building, looks like some sort of third world banana republic trying to protect some out-of-favor dictator. I was not able to do my usual hookup with Matt Elrod of Common Sense for Drug Policy for the Drug War Facts, so we recorded it in the hotel room.
Poor John Walters. You have to feel sorry for the drug czar. First, his boss tries to take away the czar's biggest source of influence, control over hundreds of million dollars in high-intensity drug trafficking area money, which he doles out to states and local governments. Then, the Washington Post, official news of record for the nation's capital, ignores the czar's recent workshop on marijuana and mental health to cover a report on marijuana arrests put out by a reform group. A report that really only rehashes the FBI's annual arrest data, the same news that gets released every year. This year, it's above the fold on the front page. Poor John. Well, Mr. Walters, we do feel sorry. Just don't let the door hit you where the dog should have bit you. For the Drug Truth Network, from Washington, D.C., this is Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
Doing that Michael Moore thing does seem to work. I was able to get a couple of congressmen to stop and talk to me there on the street corner next to the guys with all the machine guns.
Thank you.
All right, I'm proud to meet up here on the street with Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Hello, sir.
Hello, good to see you.
Yes, sir. Did you by chance see the Washington Post story this morning about marijuana consuming the vast majority of our drug war dollars?
Well, it's pretty obvious that the war on drugs has gone awry, and that the focus on marijuana has been misplaced, that what we need to do is have a whole new drug policy. And if people have problems with consuming drugs and they got medical problems, that ought to be treated as a medical matter, but it shouldn't be criminalized. So I think that all of you are in Washington right now. Your efforts are going to meet, I think, with a good response. I think there's a growing awareness in the Congress of the insufficiency of our drug laws, that criminalization is not the way to go. And I'm glad to be here to support you. And people ought to go to my website at Kucinich.us to see the whole different approach we're taking to politics in this town. It's about time that we had a politics which was humane, which was sensitive and sensible.
Another congressman who stopped to talk with me was California Democrat Sam Farr.
And Congressman Sam Farr,
yes,
in
sir.
California.
Yes, sir. And your thoughts. What are we having a success in this drug war? Where is it headed?
Well, I think that the biggest problem is the United States won't commit to treatment programs. If we really wanted to cut the market purchasing power of what's funnels the drug war, I think we have to deal with treatment in the United States. I'm also not a big fan of the fact that there's so much illicit money in the drug program that leads to corrupting countries and corrupting judicial systems and political systems. So I think the illicit money is a big problem. But I'm also one supporter of the California Medical Marijuana Initiative. I'm receiving an award from them tonight for my actions here in Congress. So I'm not prudish about, I think, the drug issue. But I do think that we have to be much more clever in investing our resources in America in treatment programs. And I think if we did more of that, we would see that the supply side would go down, and if we could supply sides down and the evil obscene amounts of money that's in it is taken away, then you can get down to a rational debate about legalization of uses.
And once again, the voice of the average Joe from Michael Moore's street corner.
Can you tell me your name or the city you're from?
Brent, Kansas.
Okay, and sir, is this policy of drug prohibition working?
Nope.
Give us your reasons why not.
Well, I think that people do what they want to do. So I think that people want to do drugs, and you can't stop them with law enforcement if that's what they really want to do.
Well, many people say it's nothing more than the maintenance of white supremacy in today's America. Blacks go to prison at the rates of 8, 10, and 50 times more than do whites. Your thoughts there, sir?
Well, that's true. I do think that the judicial system is geared toward not just blacks, but just lower socioeconomic people. And I think that directs people to the jails. I think people who have more wherewithal financially can easily get out of going to jail for possession of marijuana, cocaine, any drugs. As you see now, methamphetamines, a lot of people are going to jail for it, and that's usually the lower socioeconomic class white people are going to jail for that. So,
while in D.C., I got a chance to visit with our guest on Cultural Baggage from a couple of weeks ago, Mr. Cliff Thornton.
We're still making plans for the, again, for lack of a better term, as yet, end the drug war day in Houston. We're going to expose the fraud. And your thoughts, sir, as we approach that day?
Well, what I've been doing is traveling around the country, attending and speaking at many of conferences concerning race and women. And what I'm finding is that when you start offering up jobs and rebuilding the infrastructure, this process of legalization takes on an entirely different light. So I think we're on the right track when we talk about reparations for those hardest hit for the drug war, because those are some of the people that need the help the most, and I think that's a good policy, a good start to get these people involved in the movement.
One of my, quote, competitors was at the Marijuana Policy Project training sessions, the press conference, and the wonderful gala, Miss Loretta Nall.
Loretta, tell the folks a bit about the work you do, both for in the U.S. and in Canada.
Drug policy reform across the board. I kind of look at myself as a one-woman DPA or MPP. One of my main focuses is kids. When police officers go into high schools and pose as students and arrest, you know, youngins and drag them off to the prison industrial complex. I also work, you know, in the Alabama State Legislature. I do news shows on POT TV. I have a radio talk show in Montgomery, Alabama, 2 or 3 days a week. And I'm also a Libertarian candidate for governor of Alabama next year. And I work, go up in and out of Canada speaking to them about why it's you know, vitally important to keep the U.S. out of their drug policy. And I've even been down to Colombia, South America to study the aerial fumigation of arm of Plan Colombia on peasant farmers.
$50 billion a year, some folks say, we spend for this drug war. Do you see any success in any of those three countries?
Well, it depends on the way we would measure success would be no, but the way the government measures success, yes, you've got oppressed people, you've got, you know, prison industrial complexes, you've got, you know, police state mentality and more government control over every aspect of our lives. So it depends on who you're asking. The government would say, hell yeah, it's been highly successful, but the people that live under it know it's been a complete failure. If you line it up to what it was supposed to do from the beginning, what it was designed to do, no, it's all been an absolute failure.
I've got to say that this was perhaps the best of the drug policy conventions, seminars, and training sessions I've ever been to. And helping to coordinate this event, Miss Stephanie Vogel.
Stephanie, this has been, I think, a very powerful experience for most folks. Tell the listeners out there what we've learned.
Well, this workshop, the great workshop that the Marijuana Policy Project has been organizing now for the third time, is a training workshop for grassroots activists from across the country. We invited 75 folks who travel to D.C. and also have about 25 to 30 local activists who are here. So we've got about 100 people who have been involved in three training sessions yesterday, looking at things like coalition building, transforming institutions, media, and specifically how do messages get formed through the media, and how can marijuana policy reform groups more effectively get their voices heard.
Next up, we hear from the press conference the woman on the bubble, whose case is now before the U.S. Supreme Court, Ms. Angel Raich.
My name is Angel Raich, and I'm from Oakland, California, and I have a case pending before the United States Supreme Court right now. We're expecting the decision any time. It could come down as late as the end of June. If the Supreme Court does grant us our wish to be safe, to be able to use the medicine that we need, then the war on patients will be over. However, if we lose, it means that the road to our work has just only begun. And I can tell you that as long as I have breath in my body, I plan and I will come out here if it takes every single last breath in my little body, my little 100-pound body, to fight, to stand up. If I could tell you, I came today to talk to some of the congressmen in from my state, the state of California, and they refused to meet with me. And I can tell you that until you meet with me, I will be calling you, I will be knocking on your door, and I will come to Congress if I have to sit and lock myself to the chain, myself to the doors of this building. I can tell you that I am not going to give up. I'm here fighting for not just my life, but for all the lives of all these patients standing behind me, all the patients that are here in the U.S. And I think that Congress owes it to me to come to the table with me and at least have the courtesy to talk to me. It's only fair. Have a little compassion. And please, allow us the medicine that we need. We're not trying to break the laws. Our state, the state of California, has a law on its books. But do you think the federal government cared about that? No. They raided us anyway. 3 weeks after 9/11, instead of going after bin Laden and using taxpayers' dollars where it really counts, no, they were out there raiding sick and disabled patients. And I'm sorry, but that infuriates me.
Next, we talk with Chuck Thomas, one of the founders of the Marijuana Policy Project, and a director of Interfaith Drug Policy Initiative.
We're an organization that works to add a moral and religious perspective to the drug policy reform movement. We compile all of the existing favorable policy statements from various religious denominations on some of the issues that are currently in the public arena, such as medical marijuana, mandatory minimum sentencing reform, and so forth. And then we work to mobilize these denominations' staff who work on policy issues to help get more support from religious denominations, congregations, and individual people of faith and goodwill to work to have achievable successes.
CNN allowed me the last question at the press conference. And I pointed out that John Walters tours the country saying marijuana is more dangerous than crack. How do we fight that propaganda? Montel was quick to answer.
They said it today in a newspaper, trying to claim that children under the age of 12 who have been exposed to regular uses of marijuana will, at later on in life, become schizophrenic. You expose a child to too much water under the age of 12, something may go wrong. By the time, you know, let's address the issue. We know for a fact that in California, since the referendum was passed, marijuana uses amongst teenagers is down.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this program from Washington, D.C., and I want to close out with an extract of an interview I did with Dr. Rick Doblin, the president of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, MAPS.org.
I tell you, Rick, there's a lot of news. Even the Washington Post this morning is talking about marijuana, sentencing, restructuring, all kinds of things going on in this drug war. It's every day, it's everywhere, isn't it?
I think it is. I think people have started to wake up to the fact that the prohibition system that we have is counterproductive, that it's not only hurting people that have problems with marijuana, because otherwise they could get better help in a different system, but it's hurting all those people that don't even use it, that might need it for medicine, that are having their resources wasted, and that in general we live in this culture that has way too much fear, way too much misinformation promulgated by the government to justify prohibition. And I think people are starting to wonder, why is it that we have these systems that lie, distort, and suppress, when we could be much better off finding a way to negotiate relationships with marijuana and other drugs that are more productive and healthy for society.
Next week, the network gets to audition Century of Lies. More from this convention on the 420 reports. I want to thank Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org. And as always, because of drug prohibition, I remind you, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful. For the Drug Truth Network and our affiliates in the U.S. and Canada, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Jap dancing on the edge of none of this.